Ron Ananian.
The difference between cars today and cars, you know, classic muscle cars 50 years ago. The car today, that new Corvette will do, you know, 0 to 100 miles an hour in 3 seconds or 4 seconds, whatever the number is. And,
wow.
it's effortless. It's just, and you're there.
Here I come in my 57. She's a real rider. Paint perfection with a custom engine.
Car doctor.
You got to respect the machine. You got to respect what's there, especially in a situation now in an urban area where it's getting more and more crowded. It becomes a mandatory thing.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines, or maybe tractors as the case might be, as we open up this hour of the Car Doctor. Ron Ananian here at 855-560-9900, here to take your calls and answer your questions. As always, you got a car problem, you've got a vehicle that's not running right, I'm here for it, 855-560-9900. More information at cardoctorshow.com, Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor Facebook page, and if you need me during the week, the Car Doctor's always on call, Ron at cardoctorshow.com. I'm steamed today, folks. I really am. Sometimes I wish this was a serious XM channel because we could really talk. But article came out this week from John Deere. John Deere has sent letters of opposition for legislators with bills filed. They're all saying the same thing, that allowing anyone other than John Deere dealerships to repair their vehicle, their equipment, will result in the unsafe operation of its products, disruption of machine capabilities and performance, changes to emission controls, voiding of warranties, yada, 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 yada. The right to repair is coming up again. And this is bigger than, you know, who's going to fix it. If you read this article, and what I want you to do is go out and Google John Deere right to repair tractor maintenance 2018 and look at this article, and I want you to read through it. And if you get far enough down the list without going, holy cow, or something worse, you're going to realize what they're saying is when the tractor breaks down in the middle of the 200-acre farmer's field or bigger, and they can't get a repair technician out there to fix it, and the farmer doesn't have the training or the equipment or the knowledge or the repair procedure to repair it, the crop goes bad. Think about that. The crop goes bad. How long before the crop goes bad, there's a food shortage? Technology is doing us in, and the stupidity that we're backing it up with isn't helping either. Great article. Really great article. They talk about the National Grange agrees on behalf of over 200,000 members of the National Grange. We support the Right to Repair Act because we believe in an owner's right to maintain, service, repair, and rebuild their vehicle or farming equipment on their own accord or by the repair choice shop of their choice. Our members, listen to this, our members, this is farmers now, farm members are located mostly in rural areas. Yeah, no kidding. And they value their ability and freedom to fix and repair their own vehicles, tractors, and other farm equipment. Listen, you're on a farm. You're in the middle of nowhere. It's not like, you know, you're accessible to, you know, parts and you can get a technician out there in terms of, quick, right? If that tractor's in the middle of the field and it's stuck, it's broken, it's not operating, it's doing something wrong, farmers have been fixing their equipment in the middle of their fields since before there was equipment, right? The horse lost a shoe. They shooed the horse in the middle of the field, and they went back to work. I think this is ludicrous. I don't know what we're trying to accomplish by trying to lock them out, because I've got to believe that, you know, once again, like auto repair, there aren't enough John Deere dealerships to fix all the tractors if they broke. More and more farmers, the article continues, are turning to the Internet, thank God, to learn how to repair their complex equipment. They are turning to websites like iFixit to share techniques for maintaining equipment, but that's not enough. We've got to start fighting for the farmers. They deserve to be able to repair their equipment quickly and on their own terms. We are working to pass fair repair legislations at the state level that would put farmers back in control of the repair of their own equipment. And we've successfully petitioned the Copyright Office to carve out protection for modifications and repairs made to software, and tractors will continue to fight for the rights of farmers to repair what they own. This is serious. This is really serious, because we're slowly coming to the point where if the farmer can't repair his equipment, we're going to disrupt the food chain. And disrupting the food chain has so many implications of disrupting the economy, food, the grocery store. You know, how are we going to eat? This is all about right to repair. The Right to Repair Act is an argument that goes back and forth between manufacturers and independent repair facilities that states that only dealerships should have, and there's a lot more to it than just this, but only dealerships should have the necessary right to repair information to maintain a vehicle for a variety of reasons, among them software infringement and emission controls and correct repair procedure. I'm pretty sure, in my opinion, that there are smart people in repair dealerships, car, tractor, otherwise, and smart people outside of repair facilities, car, dealership, independent, etc. Let the chips fall where they may. Give everybody what they need to maintain whatever it is they want to work on, whether it's a car or a tractor. And the reason this story caught my attention and the reason you've got me talking about it up here on a show called The Car Doctor is because it's Right to Repair. The Right to Repair Act has won, and I believe this was in California, which kind of doesn't surprise me. You know, there's a conversation about California and nuts rolling downhill, but I won't get into it here. Just suffice it to say that things don't look good. Very upset. Very, very upset. I think we're in trouble, and I think we all need to call our elected officials and ask them, you know, what's going on. The article talks about, before I can fix my tractor, we have to fix the copyright law. That's at slate.com. They talk about it in a blog. Repair.org executive director is testifying for Fair Repair in Nebraska. Tom, we should get somebody from some of these organizations up here to talk about this, because what happens right to repair with tractors is surely going to spill over, if it hasn't already, in terms of right to repair with cars. And let me tell you how bad things are here in New Jersey. All right, and I'll speak from my corner of the world, so I won't project. I'm not talking about, you know, news media, which, by the way, when you do Google search this story, Farmers Right to Repair Act 2018, you're going to come to a couple of websites. Wired.com was one of them. They won't let you print from their website, which I don't understand. You're reporting the news. Let's share the news. Why is it such a control thing? They want to make you sign up for an email address. Again, why? We're sharing news here. We're not trying to, you know, control anything. Sometimes I think the comments about the media controlling things to a degree are accurate. But here in New Jersey, in North Jersey, they're losing repair shops. You can see it. Guys are getting older. There's nobody coming in. The cost to get into a repair shop business is very, very high. And there's less places to go. There's less training classes that people are attending. One of the national trainers, I go and attend Chris's classes, Chris Lewis, the boys from ATG. I go there as many times as I can get there in a year. And Chris spoke to me Thursday. We talked their upcoming November 14, 15 class on CAN communication network data bus information. Yep, we're talking about fixing cars. Network CAN communication data bus is being seriously considered being canceled because not enough people have signed up for it. They need a certain number to make the numbers work. And I'm saying, but how can that be? Because, you know, the phone calls that I get here, the phone calls I get at the shop from shops that are asking me CAN data questions that make me say, well, I guess they really need training, but they're not willing to go. The backlog at the shop right now is about two and a half weeks, and that's not abnormal. I'm hearing stories of dealerships backed up a week and a half, 2 weeks, and it seems like, and I'll have to lump myself in here and pat myself on the back, that the better shops are busy, and the better shops are backed up because the complexity of the car has gone up. And, you know, it's about the repair shop making that commitment to training, to equipment, to establishing procedures. And things like right to repair are disrupting it. Things like right to repair are creating issues where without proper training and equipment, there's a problem. In the case of the car, well, you're not going to work tomorrow. Your car is broken. In the case of the farmer, well, the tractor is not coming out of the field because the tractor is broken. But there's a bigger problem because we're not taking the food out of the field, and sooner or later that's going to catch up to us. We're letting technology govern us, not governing technology. We're doing it backwards, folks. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'd like to hear your opinion. If you've got one this hour on it, or if you're listening to this vis-a-vis podcast and you've got a thought, send it to me, ron@cardoctorshow.com. I'd love to read it up here on air. But we all need to be aware of, go out and Google John Deere Farmer's Right to Repair 2018. Read that story, see if you can maintain your composure. I'll be back right after this.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Let's get over to talk to Sean in Duluth, Minnesota, and open up the garage doors today. Sean, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hi. Say, Ron, I spoke to you about a month ago. Okay. I've got a 98 Chevy with a 5.7 liter in there, and I've been having this problem for, maybe 6 months or so now. I'll peel 171, 174, so I'm lean on both banks.
Right.
And what I did, and I told you at the time, was, you know, I initially started with cleaning the mass airflow sensor and a new fuel filter, new air filter, cleaned the throttle body. I cleared the codes with a O'Reilly gauge, and everything came back within 10 miles. And next step was to put new oxygen sensors in, both pre- and post-converter, new PCV valve, cleared the codes, came back again. Then I actually put a new mass airflow sensor in, and I actually tried to check around the intake with some carburetor cleaner and some starting fluid, and didn't get any change in RPM or anything. And the last thing I did was I replaced the vacuum hoses coming from the lockers into the intake, and then the other one on the passenger side that goes from the locker into the air intake before the throttle body there.
Okay.
And when I called you, you said, you know, go buy a OBD2 tester and, you know, go from there and use some propane and et cetera, et cetera. And I did borrow a relatively cheap one, I guess, from a mechanic. And unfortunately, the live data function on this, it took data like every 3 seconds, so I really couldn't use propane around the intake and get anything. But I did register some readings. The fuel trim on both bank one and bank two at startup was reading like between 9 and 11%, and then at 190 degrees, it'd be up to 24.9%.
Right. That's,
and
that's,
so what I did was I went to a local shop here for $50, and he's got a $10,000 Snap-on system there, I guess. And we did some checks at idle, and we took it out in the road, and he didn't really come up with anything there. And we brought it back into the shop. We tested fuel pressure, which tested okay. And we smoke tested the intake system and thought that there was a possible intake gasket leak there, and although nothing was confirmed, and I left. And then I came back the next day, and I said, would you be so good as to, you know, hook the meter up again and you know, let's gas around the intake and the hoses and stuff with your Snap on there and see if that's going to change anything. And he said, yeah, you know, and so he did. And, you know, we can't really find anything except to say that he thinks it's an intake manifold gasket. I think it's an intake manifold gasket. But I don't want to tear into this thing, you know, unless I get some better information. So I was looking for some other advice from you, if possible.
All right. So, you know, the key here is, what's fuel trim? Fuel trim, this fault code sets at 20% or better. So if just to refresh everybody, if zero is balanced, plus 20, when it gets to 20.5%, it's setting a fault code on that bank. In this case, both banks are pretty equal, so we've got a lean code. The question I've got is, where's it coming from? All right. If it's not vacuum lines, did you happen to try plugging the brake booster? Is this a brake booster or a hydro boost vehicle?
That's a brake booster vehicle.
Okay. Could I have a small vacuum leak in the brake booster creating this? Possible. All right.
And we did gas around there, but didn't see.
I don't know if you'd see it. I would physically, I would just pull the line. I would pull the line out of the booster and plug it. And it might come to that, Sean. You know, it might be more than one line leaking, creating the condition. So it might be where unplug the brake booster, cork the line. It might be where uncork the unplug the purge valve, cork it. so it can't draw any air, although you would think it would be drawing fumes and making it rich, but just to play it safe, let's make this a basic engine, all right? If we get this to the point where no vacuum leaks out of any vacuum source, and we verified the mass intake duct, make sure the duct itself is good, right? You looked at that, no cracks, no no leaks there. If you take this out on the road, have your mechanic take it out on the road and bring up calculated load. Did we talk about calculated load the last time?
I think we did, and I think you were saying like it should be running between like 90-95% somewhere
right.
in that vicinity.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Right. He puts his basically calculated load is a calculation, like it says, based on mass airflow sensor efficiency. All right, inhale.
Yep.
Right? How well did you do it? Everybody does it different. Every car does it different, but every car has to meet a certain standard. So if we put our foot to the floor from a 10-mile kick and we're looking at calculated load, we should see that mass airflow sensor, if it's responding correctly and reporting all the air being pulled in, that mass airflow sensor should report 90 percentile or better. All right? If you want to see an example of it and learn the, what's the word I'm looking for, learn the procedure correctly, do it to a good car. So, you understand if the car's got good fuel trim and, you know, you want to learn how something should work, test a good car. See, your problem is you're testing a bad car. All right? So, I want to know, where's calculated load? If mass airflow reports calculated load correct, if fuel pressure is good, if volume is good, if there are no vacuum leaks, if PCV isn't out of calibration creating a problem, for that matter, plug the PCV. Plug every vacuum line you can get to. At that point, it's just an engine. And if that thing is still showing 24% off idle, and the fact, I got to tell you, it just dawned on me, if it's off idle, I doubt this is a vacuum leak. I think this is something else somewhere, and I'm going to think more along lines of intake, all right? Maybe you want to crack this, you know, bring the throttle up to 1,800 RPM, and when fuel trim is 24%, you want to sit there and then hit it with the propane, because maybe it's pulling on the gaskets in such a way that it's creating the condition. But propane, fuel trim, there's a reason why this thing is drawing and running so lean, and that'll bring it to a conclusion. Just got to verify mass airflow is good. And, you know, even if you change it, I still check a mass airflow, because you know what new means, never ever worked. But, you know, there's no rocket science here. I always think of, if I could get it back to a basic engine, or how as basic as I can get it with today's vehicles, you know, that's kind of what I'm trying to do here. And sometimes to diagnose, and I say this a lot lately, sometimes to diagnose, it's differential diagnosis. Tell me what's good. Prove to me what's good. Whatever's left, that's going to be bad. Go from there. Call me next week. Let me know how you make out. I'm Ron Anini in the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. We are back right after this.
When the family car needs some fixing, there's only two things that really matter: getting the right part and getting some good advice. It's a pretty safe bet that with over a million parts in stock, Pep Boys has the right part right now. The Pep Boys pros are extensively trained to find the right part for just about any car or truck. Better yet, these pros can also handle the entire installation or service needed. It's always good to have options, and know the Pep Boys pros have it covered either way.
Me both, brother. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. Who was that, Tom? I can't think of the name of that group. That's
AC/DC.
That's right, AC/DC. I was listening to Twisted Sister the other day. Do you know where Twisted Sister came from?
Long Island.
Hohokus.
Oh.
Yeah. Like the next town over from the shop. I was stunned to know that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and Dee Snider, when I worked at a different radio station in New York City, actually came in and auditioned for Afternoon Drive. What a great guy he is.
Yeah, I've
really
heard that.
Down to earth.
And he's a real car guy, too.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Real car guy. Speaking of car guys, I want you to also, on your interview to get list, there's a new show on Netflix, Gotham Garage. Actually, I think it's called Rust to Riches.
Okay.
It's about this, where are they, Temecula? Temecula, California. I hope I'm saying that right. T-E-M. The owner's name is Mark Towles, T-O-W-L-E-S. This is a really great show. There's only 8 episodes on Netflix. It's a Netflix-only show. They'll take a junk car, fix it, sell it, take that car, fix that up to something better, sell that, and within 3 or 4 cars, they go from buying something for $10, they've got a $150,000 car. It's really kind of cool what they do.
I bet.
I was watching it last night. They created the Franken van. They took a Volkswagen bus right away. I went, ooh. And right, they took a Volkswagen bus, cut it in half, right?
Mm-hmm.
They went and they traded a junkyard motorcycle they got for free, a Honda Goldwing, whatever it is, whatever, 220, 221. They took that. They got that for nothing. They stripped it down. They made it look like a steam-powered motorcycle. It was really crazy with $200 worth of copper and a beer keg, right? They traded that for a 454 big block Chevy with a blower on it. They welded that into the floor of the Volkswagen. Chopped the roof of the Volkswagen. I mean, it was nuts. And then they went out into the desert and went flying along. Great. You got to get that guy. I want to talk to Mark Towles. I think he'd be a fun interview. He really would. I hope they do more of that show. It's got my eye. Anyway, let's get over and talk to Greg in Iowa. 2016 Jeep Cherokee. Greg, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron.
Yes, sir.
My wife sometimes likes to put the foot down to the floor with her car. And one day she was getting on the freeway, made a hard left turn to get on the on-ramp, and as she was making that hard turn, the engine died, and the traction control malfunction light came on. She pulled over to the side of the road, shut the engine off, restarted it. Everything came up, no warning light anymore, and she was shaken up a little bit. She drove off to the next exit and waited for me to come rescue her. And when I got there, I couldn't find anything wrong with the car. The only thing that I found that might have been out of whack was I popped the fuse box open out under the hood, and I was able to give probably 30% of the fuses underneath there just that extra little snap.
Yeah.
Like they were trying to work their way out.
Yep.
And the car was perfectly fine until last week. She was driving down the interstate going only about 50 miles an hour in a heavy rain, and the traction control malfunction came on again and then went off.
But the engine
nothing
didn't stall.
Since.
Right, the engine didn't stall.
Did not stall that time.
Okay. And
it just kept rolling.
All right, and that's where we are at this moment.
Yeah. Otherwise, the car runs fine.
The
only time it stalled was that first time.
How many miles on it, Greg?
55.
Okay, so you do a fair amount of driving. Are you out in farm country in Iowa?
Sometimes we are.
Rough roads, dirty roads.
Sometimes we do a fair amount of driving on gravel.
Okay.
Not every day, but it's enough.
So let's talk about how does the traction control system on that car work? Like a lot of cars, they're looking at the rotation or the how fast their wheels are turning, each individual wheel. They're tracking it off the ABS sensors or wheel speed sensors. So if one speed sensor puts out an erroneous message or, you know, changes its signal, all of a sudden the car thinks that that wheel is slowing down when it's not, and it will put the car into a false ABS or traction control event. So, you know, one of the things I've learned to look for on farm vehicles, quote unquote, no harm intended, is put it up in the air and just look at the wheel speed sensors, look at the tone rings, which should be on the outer end of the axle. I believe they're exposed. Do any of them look damaged, packed with mud, packed with debris? You know, that's the simple stuff. That's something you can do just to see, you know, do we have good clear tone rings on the vehicle? Then, you know, the next step would be that I like your idea about fuses. I'm seeing a lot of weird things with fuses and such, but, you know, just are battery cable connections good, clean, and tight? Are all grounds good, clean, and tight? And my next step would be I'd want to try and drive this, and I'd like to use a scope on it versus a scan tool. Scan tool won't be fast enough. And at least what we call wave out or pin out – the four ABS sensors and just stack them up against each other. In other words, an ABS sensor is going to produce a voltage signal. If we're traveling down the road at 40 miles an hour, wheels straight ahead, we should see an equal signal from each sensor, right?
Yep.
So if she's driving down the road and all of a sudden one signal, you know, changes its size or how often it's changing voltage from high to low, all of a sudden the computer takes that as a, hey, that wheel's slipping, let's apply the brakes, let's apply traction control, let's try and keep the vehicle straight. And, you know, the only accurate way you're going to find an intermittent, because unfortunately that's what you obviously have, the only way you're going to find it is hopefully the scope is going to see it while it's hooked up. And if it's not, then you've got another issue. One comment on the stalling, I'd also like to know, you ever reboot a computer at home? And it's got this information. Well, it's kind of what you're doing. You know, you've got this information on the desktop, and then it just sort of locks up, and you got to reboot it, and you lost that information because you didn't save it. Car computers kind of do the same thing. You know, so you start to look at the numbers. I like to look at fuel trim. I like to look to see where monitors or the self tests are. I want to see, did it do some sort of a complete reset? And if it did, what I start to think about is it lost power. It lost power. It lost ground. It lost connectivity to electrical, one end or the other, and it put that vehicle into a reset. It would be the same thing as if the battery was disconnected. Years ago, and the principle is still the same, we had a 96 Suburban. I never forgot this truck, that every time it would hit a pothole, it would stall only when it was cold. And I worked on that truck for the better part of a week, and I kind of went around and around and around, and I couldn't duplicate it. And then one day I went back to, let me make sure the battery terminals are as clean as I think they are, because I had wiggled them, but you know, I didn't take them apart. Silly me. Went to take the one terminal apart, and at first the nut was really tight. It was a side terminal, and it fought me. And then all of a sudden, it fell out. The ends of the bolt just fell out of the battery casing. And what happened was, you know, the battery case was leaking acid. It had eroded away the stud and the nut, and it just made a poor connection under the right impact, under a cold operating an engine, because an engine, even with all these computers, is still operating. You know, it's still operating under duress until it's warmed up like any other mechanical device. And just the right bump, the right flick of the wrist, and that car would shut off. Just make sure battery cables, connections are good, clean, and tight. And it probably wouldn't hurt, and this will sound silly, but I'll hook a voltmeter up to a battery, and if I can, I will gently, G-E-N-T-L-Y, gently tap the sides of the battery with a rubber mallet. I'm looking for shock impact. I'm looking to see if the voltage changes or drops or in any way varies from what it's supposed to be or is. And, you know, just looking to see, does that battery make some sort of a spike? All right, sir?
Okay.
So try.
Sounds good. Well, I'm a broadcast engineer. I've been taught how to tap broadcast equipment gently with a hammer.
Yeah, so you know, you've got
probably handle that.
Tom Ray can explain the gentle. Well, he can't explain the gentle part, but he knows about the hammer part. So I got to go. I'm up against the clock. Tom's yelling at me. You let us know what happens. All right, Greg?
Good deal.
Take good care. 855-560-9900. Tom, I see you're getting your relatives to call now. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Annie, the car doctor. Let's get over and talk to Dave Holyoke, Mass. Is that Holyoke, Mass? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Dave, how are you? Welcome back. You never found that CRT screen, huh?
Yeah, I haven't found one. No. Okay. That guy, like I told you, the one you turned me on to, he had nothing but Buick, and the guts aren't the same or anything.
Yeah. Try this guy. This is the only other guy I could think of. All right.
Wait
now,
a minute. Let me write something down here.
Eastern Electronics used to be one of the biggest GM repair facilities on the East Coast, going back 20 years ago. And when they shut down, I think 15 years ago, Theo, the head tech, took over the business. And I actually think he's working out of his house or in a commercial building close to his house in Elmwood Park, New Jersey. If Theo can't fix it, you know, maybe he's got a line on it. I'm not really sure if I'm helping you or hurting you or just trying to send you in a direction.
Anything would help.
201-342-3945.
I came across somebody that told me there was a guy from Buffalo that rebuilt them, guaranteed them for a couple of years, and then I was going to take my old one out and send it to him and put the new one in, but I never was able to find out where in Buffalo he was.
There's got to be. I find it very hard to believe that, you know, they're just all gone. You know,
it's, I think the whole thing is that the Oldsmobile was totally different from the Buick. Buick and Pontiac probably ran about the same.
Right.
I think Cadillac at one time had it, too.
You know, I wonder, you know, maybe you got to hunt. It's like you got to hunt where there's where there's bigger fish, so to speak. And you wonder what's in and around Los Angeles. My gosh, the car culture around Los Angeles is so huge. You've got to think that somebody on the West Coast either has, you know, some parts stored away or, you know. And that's part of the problem, too, right? That, listen, I know a guy around here in New Jersey. Supposedly he's got 14 409 Chevy engines. He's hoarding for God only knows what reason. He's 75 years old. He says he's gonna use them one day. I'm like, dude, you better do it soon. You know, it's time slipping away.
I used to have a 409.
Yeah, a million years ago, right? You wonder
why
people
say things.
Do you get
many calls from the West Coast?
Do I get many calls from the West Coast?
Yes.
Yeah, we've gotten West Coast. We get West Coast phone calls, and so we are on the West Coast. So they're hearing us out there, and then the podcast numbers take us around the world. So you would think, and let's make a plea here. If anybody's got any information, 89 Olds Toronado Trofeo.
Yeah.
Dave from Mass is looking for the CRT screen, which is the color touch screen. Another GM idea. GM giant mistakes that was used to control the. Climate control, radio, right? What else did it do? It does everything.
Well, it completely analyzed the whole car when you first started the car. You know, the heat, the lights, the everything.
Yeah. Just really way out there in the future. They were.
I can drive it without it, but I gotta find my way.
Yeah, but you know what? That was the fun of it. That was the fun of the whole car. So it, hey, listen, sometimes real quick and then I got to go, but we have a 2012 Chevy Tahoe in the shop. It needs a front differential. If this makes you feel any better, it's not just old different things. It needs a front differential. We wanted to buy the whole assembly, 51,000 mile real clean truck. GM doesn't make it anymore. 6 years old. You figure it out.
Geez.
Yeah, it's, you know, they get rid of parts so quick. Hey, let's just buy another one. Dave, I got to go. I'm up against the clock. Let's see if that does anything for you. Good luck with Theo and Eastern Electronics. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Tony, I just want to say hello. It's a pleasure to look across the glass and see you this week.
Pleasure's all mine.
I've missed you, dear.
I know you have.
So, you know, you're holding up all okay so far?
Look, it is what it is with the New York Giants.
I didn't say anything.
I'm not a fair weather fan. I know where you were going with this, okay?
I just want to make sure you're okay.
It is what it is, Ron.
You know, you got up on those railroad tracks last week. We heard you were holding up all the trains walking down the tracks.
I've been a New York Giant fan for 48 years. I know how they are. I have to take them at face value, okay?
Yeah, well,
so I'm not going to jump off the cliff or throw myself in front of a locomotive just because the Giants are scrubs.
Look at it this way. At least you're not a Mets fan.
That's right. Yeah. That's true.
Now, what if we took players from the Mets, the Yankees, the Jets, and the Giants? We can make one team. We just got to figure out what sport that would be.
No. It won't work.
It won't work.
New York, we still need the frustration for rooting for the Yankees.
Is that
the
what
Mets,
it is?
The Giants or the you know, whatever.
At least we're not Baltimore Orioles fans.
Oh, Lord.
Yes.
60 games out of first place?
Or Cleveland Browns fans, even though Cleveland just beat the Jets this past Thursday night.
And we're so far off the subject of cars. Real quick, folks. Did you hear the part about, I didn't know this, but in Cleveland, Budweiser had all these little refrigerators in the bars?
Yes.
And they were electronically locked? And when the Jets lost, or when Cleveland won to beat the Jets,
free beer for everyone.
Free beer for everybody. They electronically unlocked, wirelessly unlocked all the refrigerators, and everybody got free beer.
Unfortunately, it was old beer because it was in there over a year.
630 something days.
Wow.
Yeah. So that. Just. Crazy stuff.
Oh, by the way, Tony, thanks for being here today. You get to look at Ron instead of me.
Yeah. No problem.
Well, of course, it's vice versa because I don't have to see Tom anymore. Of course, it's kind of blinding in there when they both, anyway. I want to talk about this real quick because of all the fires out west. I never thought about this, but all the forest fires going on in California And this comes to us courtesy of the Car Care Council. With forest fires continuing to burn throughout the West, the nonprofit Car Care Council reminds car owners to have their cabin air filters inspected and changed regularly. You know, that's actually very true. And especially this time of year, heading into winter, because today's the first day of fall, or tomorrow, yeah, today's the first day of fall. You know, we've got to start thinking about, we're going to be in a closed cabin. We just went through the summer. It's time to think about changing the cabin air filter if we haven't already. Rich White, the executive director of the Car Care Council, says, and he's correct, with the amount of smoke and debris caused by forest fires, it is very likely the cabin air filters in the vicinity have been severely affected. Not to mention vehicle air filters, too. So if you're in a part of the country, forest fires, heaven forbid, lots of debris, dirt and dust in the air, it's time to start thinking about the, it's time to start thinking about, you know, changing filters like that. More information at carcare.org. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Looking up, good mechanics aren't expensive, they're priceless. See ya.